people in the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome, welcome. It is Friday, April 30th, the last day of April in 2021, and tomorrow is May Day, International Workers' Day, everybody. Welcome, Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to shit poster Von Moderna of the deck, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel. Welcome, everybody, over on our YouTube channel. I see that once again, we're having a little bit of a sound issue right now. Hopefully, that is going to pop back up in a second. But while you're over there on our YouTube channel, make sure to don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit the bell so you know that every time that we go live. Oh, yes. And today's show, we've got a good one for you, everybody. We've got a good one. Yes, indeed. On his ahead of his 100th day in office, Joe Biden addressed a joint session of Congress to lay out, yes, another ambitious policy agenda in his American Families Plan. Whew, I've got to tell you, this one is something. As reported in the New York Times, the proposal, quote, the proposal includes $1 trillion in new spending, $800 billion in tax credits, much of which is aimed at expanding access to education and childcare. The package includes financing for universal pre-kindergarten, a federal paid leave program, efforts to make childcare more affordable, free college, community college for all, aid for students at colleges that historically serve non-white communities, expanded subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, and extension of new federal efforts to fight poverty. Boom! Now, this is all a plan at this point, right? And if you actually head on over to the American Prospect, you can read a very much more careful analysis on this. That's going to say what is actually going to have to happen in order for to make this real, and some pressure points where we should be watching carefully about what's going to happen with these funds and how they're going to roll out. But still, nonetheless, it is out in front. Pretty amazing. Also this week, Biden signed an executive order increasing the minimum wage for all federal contractors to $15 an hour. That increase will impact hundreds of thousands of workers nationwide. And the FBI raided Rudy Giuliani's home and office this week. Oh, God. Into the melting man's lair himself, seizing computers and cell phones. While it is unclear exactly what federal agents were seeking, it is the strongest signal yet that he could eventually face federal charges, according to the AP. But according to a new report in the New York Times just this morning, the probe seems to be centering on the firing of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. And if there's any feds out there listening to this podcast, please send us all conversations between Rudy and Doug Mastriano. Oh, Tucker Carlson, you see him this week? Tucker Carlson? Yeah, testing the boundaries of extremism this week? Yep. Earlier this week, I think it was on Monday, Carlson used his top-rated Fox News show to claim that requiring children to wear masks was child abuse. Yes, he said, quote, "Your response when you see children wearing masks as they play should be no different from your response to seeing someone beat a kid in Walmart. Call the police immediately. Contact Child Protective Services." Really, keep calling until someone arrives. What you're looking at is abuse. It's child abuse, and you are morally obligated to attempt to prevent it. That's what Tucker Carlson said on his show, and he seemed to mean it. He was really in a way. Well, his tirade seems to have been in response to new mask guidelines from the CDC, that relaxing its mask recommendations for people who are fully vaccinated. Yeah, I think Carlson really is trying to push the limit on that one. That one was like so far out there. Anyways, I got to stop. And the game of musical chairs has begun as the Census Bureau released its new state population numbers. And those numbers are used to determine, of course, the number of seats each state gets in the House of Representatives. So where there's some gains and losses, most notably gains, Texas gets 2 seats, Florida 1 seat, North Carolina 1 seat, Colorado 1 seat, Oregon 1 seat, and Montana 1 seat. But there were some significant losses there too as well. California loses a seat. New York loses a seat. Illinois loses a seat. Pennsylvania loses a seat. Ohio loses a seat. Michigan loses a seat. and West Virginia loses a seat. Crazy. Oh, and Matt Gaetz news. Remember that guy? Yeah, well, his wingman decided to sing. So we'll that. Today, a little closer to home, Pennsylvania Spotlight relaunched their website. Whoop, whoop. This is a project that's been in the works for months. And thank you to everyone who has helped make that possible, especially to Scott Wagner and Mike Terzai. And Senator Doug Mastriano and Pennsylvania Supreme Court candidate Paula Patrick were slated to speak at the Upfront in the Prophetic QAnon conference happening in Gettysburg this June, but both just issued statements condemning the event and the movement. In an article from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Mastriano's spokesperson said that, quote, Mastriano strongly condemns the QAnon conspiracy, unquote, and won't be attending the event. Apparently, Mastriano never committed to speak at this event, but sadly was used to help promote it with his picture on the invite. Yeah, I'm sure. Unconfirmed reports are that Mastriano issued this statement with a wink and a nod. And a case by a Pennsylvania high school student, Brandy Levy, made it to the Supreme Court after she was suspended from her cheerleading team after posting harsh comments about her school on Snapchat. When she failed to make the varsity cheerleading team, she posted a picture of herself flipping the bird, captioned with, F school, F softball, F cheer, F everything. My daughter's listening, so I have to be careful here. the case raises significant questions about the authority of schools to punish students for speech that occurs off school grounds. This is kind of a really interesting case. So I wanted to kind of give a little highlight and a little feed here because it is PA-based and it does have a lot to do in the impact of kind of monitoring kind of what happens in outside school premises. So that's very interesting. And this is a major week for the future of PA State System of Higher Education. On Wednesday, Chancellor Greenstein's plans to merge six universities into two was accepted by the Board of Governors. The chair of the Board of Governors, Cynthia Shapira, said, it was inspiring. Ugh. Anyways, that triggers a 60-day comment period in legislative hearings. A new report by a UMass-based Political Economy Research Institute, or PERI, also dropped this week, and that found that Greenstein's plans will lead to over 1,500 direct job losses and leading to a 700 additional indirect or induced loss jobs in the Commonwealth. The report found that, quote, the cuts amounting to 14% of overall PASHI employment are of a magnitude equivalent to the largest private sector plant closings and mass layoffs of the previous decade in Pennsylvania. Hearings began this week, and the question on the table now is if Governor Wolf really wants the destruction of PA public higher ed to be his lasting legacy. And right in my neck of the woods, there's a team of right-wing extremists running for the Penridge School Board. That's right. And they're making it easy, at least, to know who not to vote for. So do not vote for Christine Baticki, Jordan Blomgren, Ricky Chaykin, and Bob Cormack. Ricky Chaykin, by the way, has got profiles of QAnon flags flying in the back of her profiles. They are kind of like looking to keep critical race theory out of our schools. They're returning to normalcy with our children. They've engaged in anti-mask events at local grocery stores, and they believe in American exceptionalism. Yes, indeed. Things are really heating up, seriously, right here. It's been profiled by Cyril. We've had Cyril on the show before. I'll talk more about that later. Anyways, today's last call. Yes, the Mars helicopter Ingenuity failed to make its fourth flight yesterday when it failed to switch into flight mode. A similar issue occurred before its first historic flight on April 19th. But since then, NASA scientists has set to fix the helicopter and seeing if that's going to kind of work. It seemed to work before when it made three additional flights, each one of increasingly difficulty. The team is now analyzing the data in preparation for another attempt in the coming days. And China launched its main module for its first permanent space station on Thursday. The launch is the first of 11 missions necessary to complete the station and establish China as a major player in the future of space. China will also land its first rover on Mars next month. And last Friday, SpaceX's Crew 2 mission launched a new crew to the International Space Station. On their way to the space station, a piece of space junk came unexpectedly close to colliding with the capsule. The crew had to redon their spacesuits in the event of a collision. The close encounter brought renewed attention to the growing problem of space debris orbiting the Earth. The four astronauts that arrived to the International Space Station through the Crew 1 mission were scheduled to depart the ISS later today, but they were delayed for the second time due to weather. Or maybe they just want a few more days for some sightseeing? I don't know. That would be my guess. And we got some Free Will releases this week. We got Strawberry Banana Mash. That's a sour ale with strawberry, banana, and vanilla and milk sugar. And we also got The Long Full Hunt, a DDH double IPA brewed with flaked oats and wheat and hopped in the kettle with Mosaic and double dry hopped with Fonteca, Idaho Gem, and even more Mosaic in the cryo form. And last weekend, Free Will launched its Sunday Sessions. Yes, live music at the brewery. Skylar Love kicked off the season for the first show. And this Sunday, John Valerio will be taking the stage from 1 to 4 p.m. No tickets needed. There will be 19 beers on tap, wine from Penswood, and food by Trey locally sourced. Just as a public service announcement to everybody, too, get your freaking vaccines if you're going to go, and mask up. How about that? Right? All in favor of kind of return of like events, but let's not kind of have a super spreader event here. I want to remind you to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, you must check out the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or again, wherever you get your podcast. Their guest this past week was Shivanya Corbin-Johnson, the political director of the PA Democratic Party. Ooh, man, I tell you, the amazing PA women stirring the cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Make sure to follow them on Twitter, @TheNightCaucus. That's Twitter, @TheNightCaucus. And this coming week, this Monday, on Out to Coop Live, I welcome Melissa Troutman and Joshua Boaz-Prabanik, directors of the new Rights of Nature documentary, The Invisible Hand. Invisible Hand focuses on the global movement of rights of nature, starting with Grant Township, Pennsylvania, which became the first community in the United States that attempted to defend an ecosystem in court by using the rights of nature to stop a fracking waste injection well from being built in its watershed. I'm really, really looking forward to that conversation coming forward. We're also going to have, maybe next week, it might be 2 weeks, I'll have another announcement about another little segment that we're going to be doing, another special podcast show that's going to be thanks to all you people who are stepping up, becoming members, and up supporting the show. And with that, I'd like to welcome our newest patron, Steve. Steve! Thank you, Steve, for becoming a patron at the $5 a month level. Steve did it, and so can you. Yes, that's right. You can help kind of like become, you know, a kind of supporter of Raging Chicken. But go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron today. Attention gamers, check out The Game Inn for all your gaming needs. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. Got everything you can imagine from retro N64s to the latest consoles. Video games, all platforms, large collection of collectibles. Kids get a discount with every A on the report card. Check them out on their Facebook page, The Game Inn. That's with two N's. Follow them on Twitter at @TheGameInn, two N's. And got a question about a game, looking for something hard to get, shoot them a message or drop them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com. Check them out online at thegameinn.com. Yes, they are friends of the show, and the family, their son is one of my son's best friends, so show them some love. Special shout out once again to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at songadayman with two N's. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump, and now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, but we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you want to just give us a one-time donation, hit us up at paypal.me/rcpress and drop us a donation in any amount. Sean, man, it's once again, it's been a pretty kind of active week, I would say. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, busy. It was a busy week.
Oh.
I got an awesome gift from Shina, so thank you very much, Shina.
Did you?
Got it right here on my desk.
There it is.
The Stitch.
There it is.
Yes. So, you know, I'm glad people appreciate my shit posting.
Shit poster Fawn Moderna of the deck. Is that what it is? Am I
right? Yes. Yes. So
I think that's awesome.
You know, we relaunched our website this week, finally, which is great. And, you know, we'll talk more about that later, but you know, it's been a pretty good week, pretty eventful week. Got some work in.
Got some work in.
Yeah. Well, now we're writing more. So, and I also, you know, but there's like press conferences.
Is that the Imperial we? Like the we are writing more. I, however, am spending time on the deck. No.
No, Eric and I are both writing stuff, which is great. And then, no, there's events starting to come back in the Capitol. So, you know, things are slowly starting to return to normal here out in Harrisburg. So, oh, and also got my second shot on Monday.
Yeah, hey, and I get, you know what? You got your second shot on Monday. I cleared my 2 weeks out from my second shot. So that means
you don't have to wear a mask anymore.
Right? Look, we got these new guidelines. I could just go around licking stuff now. Right? It's basically how it goes. I can lick people, I can lick cars, everything. Just like you just can do it.
Hang out with your school board.
Totally. I can cough on anybody I want to, right? It's gonna be great. No, but seriously, it does. There is a certain degree of relief that I have. I mean,
I'm a week out, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to say, I mean, a week out from my second shot, like, or just about like 5 days, but I mean, like, it's still pretty effective with just the first shot. I mean, I'm not going to say I've been the most stringent with this over the past few weeks, but it's a relief knowing that. I'm finally vaccinated, you know, which is something like I didn't think we would get to this point 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the speed at which we're doing it, you know, is kind of remarkable, kind of stunning. And yeah, I mean, it's just it's getting there. So,
yeah,
Go ahead. I was going to say, I didn't really have any side effects from the second shot either, which was pretty good.
That's good. What's that?
I just had a sore arm for an evening and fell asleep early, and that was pretty much it.
That's great. I mean, I had some mild stuff like the day after. I mean, you had the Moderna, right? I mean, I had the Pfizer. I had like the following day, it was just kind of like out of it, right? It was more like really bad when I had allergies really bad in the fall. That's what way it felt. And the only thing that was different is I had like kind of lymph nodes like under my arms for like a few days afterwards, which was noticeable, but not, you know, a problem. That's it. And I'm happy, but you know, look, I'm not giving up the mask yet. So let's be clear, you know, I'm not kind of like, I plugged this at top of the show about Free Will's having their new, their open, you know, music sessions and things like this. I'm not clear. I didn't look closely enough. I'll get to it by the time we get into today's last call about whether they're gonna be inside or outside. But I personally would not feel comfortable at all going to an indoor event like that at this point.
I'm waiting for the concerts. I can't wait till they fucking come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to, like, you know, this summer I got concert tickets out in the riverfront, Portugal, the Man's Coming, you know, so I bought those tickets a couple weeks ago. I'm really looking forward to, like, being able to go to a Menzinger show or having some punk bands come through that I wanted to see. Like, Against Me was playing in Penn State on St. Patty's Day last year. Mm. Obviously they canceled. We were all going to go up there and come back. But you know, it's, I'm glad it's finally here. Like, it's like the end is in sight, and it feels good. It's relieving.
Yeah. I really hope. I mean, fingers crossed that nothing goes really awry. You know, I live, as you know, we'll talk a little bit about this really, but obviously in an area that has a strong concentration of, you know, like QAnon believers and, you know, that
fucking
are
crazy people.
Yeah, but they're like, you know, readily accepted, like, in the community, right? I mean, I've got, you know, see yard signs out with these folks is, you know, names on them. They're running for school board. And So I, you know, I'm very conscious of that. Basically, if I'm going to be going out and going around, I'm going to have my mask on, right? So there we go. Anyways.
I was going to say, I went to start off, I was going to say, like, I guess that, well, the one thing, like the Tucker Carlson thing, right?
Oh, God. All right, let's start with Tucker. That's not a bad place. I mean, I think he deserved a special mention at the top of the show before we get into serious stuff.
No, I was going to say, with Tucker Carlson, I mean, what he said the other day, I mean, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but, so on Saturday, there was another, like, Nazi rally on the Capitol steps supporting the three amendments. Literally just straight up fucking Nazi rallied all the reopened people. Russ Diamond spoke. Mike Jones spoke.
Because Pennsylvania. Fucking,
what's that?
Because Pennsylvania. Anyways, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
And then like, you know, Proud Boys showed up. America First motorcycle crew showed up, like providing fucking bodyguards as bodyguards for Russ Diamond. I mean, yeah. So these people showed up and a fucking reporter, someone ripped the mask off the face of a reporter there. Like, and you know, like,
maybe they thought the reporter was a child. But they were just trying to like prevent some really bad stuff, Sean.
But it's also like that stuff. It's amazing seeing how that happened on Saturday. And even last Wednesday when Zach was up here, I had a couple of people getting in my face for wearing a mask while taking photos of people and all, because I had my camera out. And like, no, like the hostilities towards people wearing masks is an actual thing that's like happening right now. And like that I'm watching up close and personal. So like the stuff that like Tucker said is extremely fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
Like it's stupid dangerous because he's basically promoting violence against, you know, people who are, you know, taking sane and rational responses to a pandemic right now.
I agree. And I think, you know, the one of the things that also really concerns me, right, is that what Tucker Carlson was doing, I mean, other than just being off, like, I don't know, the edge of the flat earth that he's on, the he wants people to bring police into the situation. Right. And so you basically are, you know, again, we're in the midst of, you know, historic challenges to police authority in this country, right? About finally say, well, we got to stop this kind of violence. And what Tucker Carlson is ultimately doing is saying, no, I want you to bring people with guns to the situation in a park, right? And I want you to do that. And I want you to call. And he says in that quote on that program on Sunday or on Monday, keep calling until they send someone, right? And you know, I live in one of these areas, which I guarantee you that when they walk by, my daughter is out there doing a soccer practice and some of the girls have their masks on the sidelines, there's going to be someone that's going to be picking up the phone. And what that does in terms of, you know, bringing police into a situation or even just like taxing the 911, because you know that's what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, like I don't think like anything nefarious would happen from that, but like on the police showing up with that type of stuff. But like you're putting stress on a system over frivolous bullshit.
Right. Well,
maybe you have a nut job cop that like agrees with it and shows up, but like, I don't see a cop showing up because someone's wearing a mask outside.
No, but what if it gets to that point where someone said, okay, fine, I'll just stop by. Like, so this person shuts up and they go there. And now let's say that's that neighborhood that they're getting called to is like in African-American neighborhood. And you got some like Yahoo QAnon supporting white cops showing up in that situation. And the family gets notably pissed. What happens from that scenario? I mean, how many times have we seen that play out? Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen in every scenario. And I do agree with you that, you know, look, this is the most likely to be like, okay, whatever. Right? Click. That's fine. But that's what Tucker Carlson is calling for, right? Wants to kind of militarize these kind of moments, which is really disgusting. And like we've talked about on the show before too, as well, is that he came out in some early polls as being a potential top candidate, right? That people like the most for a candidate for the presidency, you know, Republican presidency, Republican candidate for president, right, in the next round of elections, or one of the next two ones. And, you know, so he's testing out the waters, right, to see if he can keep these, you know, these rabid right-wing conspiracy theorists activated and angry and engaged.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how we were talking about this a few months ago with OAN and the other news outlets opening up and just how off the rails they've gone, and like, which way will Fox respond? Are they going to like moderate themselves or just triple down? Nope. Triple down.
Triple
baby.
Down. Triple down. Right. Right. Yep. All in. All the chips on the table. We're going bang or bust. So there we have it. So let's now we got, like, you know, the nutty stuff out of the way. So one, I mean, I'm sure that you were glued to the TV the other night during Biden's speech, because I know how much you love public addresses by politicians. I know that's your thing.
I was asleep, passed out early. May or may not have visited the Midtown.
May or may not, right? Leave that as an open question. If you want to know the answer to that question, just check Sean's lifestyle channel and he'll show you where to do.
Might have fell asleep at like 8:30 because of going to the Midtown.
Please tell me you made it home first.
I mean, it's only right across the street from my apartment. I know. It's not like it's that far of a walk.
Yeah, way to dox yourself. But but okay, so this proposal that came out from Biden for the American Families Plan, I have to say, I mean, this is pretty significant, right? This follows on the heels of the American Jobs Plan. And I think that the vast majority of, say, people, say, progressives, have been at least pleasantly surprised, right? Now, having said that, I mean, I certainly have been. I mean, I say on a regular basis, like, holy cow, I can't believe this. I can't believe that this is actually coming from Biden. I mean, there were no indications of that he was going to go this far in his campaign. If you look at his history as a legislator, this is certainly not his kind of, you know, in his wheelhouse, except for the one fact. This is something that Sam Cedar always talks about in the Majority Report, except for the fact that Biden has always managed to find the kind of middle of the party. Right. And he keeps on moving toward that middle of the party. And the fact that, you know, you've got some different personnel that are, you know, working in his cabinet, working on his staff. And the party, as we've been talking about over the past several years, has shifted significantly to the left. Right. So if what Biden represents is the middle, I mean, this is a huge win for progressives. Right. We should really, seriously be kind of looking at that. Yes. Shanna comes in and says he should have announced that he was canceling my damn loans. And this is one of these things that is just like, I mean, this is like a no-brainer, which I literally have no idea what is stopping him of that, other than some, I don't know, some holdout of kind of believing that, you know, people
some
have
legal
to
pay document
their fair
written
share.
By a right wing, some legal document written by a right wing hack.
I don't know, you know, I don't know. And look, this has been a long look. Democrats are huge fans of means testing, right? And I think that this is a legacy of some of that kind of means testing, right? The idea that, like, well, people should have to, you know, pay their fair share and they should pay things back. And, you know, if you decided to take out the loans, you should repay them, right? Not because Democrats have not been very good about doing kind of systemic critiques and systemic kind of policy responses. And I think that this is one of the ones that's, number one, it's easy. Number two, it's extraordinarily popular. Number three, it would have immediate effects. Right. And number four, it would kind of, like, you know, take the power away from the banking industry after a huge sector of the American population. Right. I mean, that has over our lives. And this is like win, 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 win right down the road. But because it's like it has systemic effects and it runs up against that particular ideology of kind of like, well, there's some wealthy people that might benefit from this program. Let's just be clear about something. Can we just remind ourselves of some very basic facts? Wealthy people are few.
Don't send it.
No, they are few. The rest of us are many, right? So there are very few really rich people, right? That's why we call them the 1%, right? That's why we call them either the 5%. And so even if you wanted to kind of make sure that, like, not any rich person got it, come on, that's a fair trade. That's a fair trade. Let's say that, like, I don't know, like 1% of the top 5% take advantage of loan forgiveness, right? And the rest of us, like, who have student loans, those loans go away. I mean, really? We're going to get hung up on that? And then we're going to try to have these dividing lines to kind of get rid of our universal program? Where we're just going to forgive these loans and kind of, like, reboot the system. Instead, we're going to kind of, like, focus, like, incessantly on these lines in between who's deserving and who's undeserving.
And also because of, like, gentrification in some major cities like Seattle, New York, Los Angeles, like $100,000 is not even a fucking livable wage.
Or, no, I mean, exactly.
I mean, you can get by with it, but it's not like it's like the same power it has like in a more rural area or places with lower cost of living. Like, yeah, and that's just the thing that like gets me with this. Like,
it's great, but let's say that's definitely a failing, right? I think that why that is not here, I just is beyond me. But some of the things that are in this bill, right, are in this proposal, are pretty wide ranging. I mean, let's say, like, if you kind of break some of this down, it's going to have, it looks like, at least several instances of this are going to have disproportionate impacts for women, right, in a positive sense, right, in the sense that you're having, you know, paid, say, childcare, you're having paid preschool, you're having kind of the, you know, the investments in education, right? You're going to have the extension of the child tax credit, right? You're going to have, so, I mean, there's going to have immediate kind of effects there. Plus, you're talking about reducing the burden on, you know, the cost of higher education. Although, look, I mean, for me, we should have free college. I mean, that's where I come down, right? But the fact that you've got, you know, free community college that is going to begin putting this bill, that is a step. It is not as far as I would like to go. That's fine, right? But it actually does have concrete investments in families. Just like when we looked at the infrastructure bill, right? We talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks back when we first came out with that infrastructure bill, the jobs plan, it's designed in such a way to have impacts on climate, right? To kind of feed kind of like resources to areas that need it most, right? So for example, you're gonna have, like, there'll be positive impacts in communities of color for that jobs bill. You have kind of research kind of funding being directed to our historically black colleges and universities, for example, right? You have investments in new jobs to redo the infrastructure, right? In order to prepare the way, which has to happen if we are going to have a clean power future. So, you know, look, there's a lot of really, really good stuff that is in this bill. So the big question now is going to be, is this politics or is this policy? In other words, is this something that the Democrats are willing to fight for, right? Because let's be clear, neither the jobs bill, which actually has a fairly significant amount of support, right? There, you know, there's a lot of folks that are behind stuff in the jobs bill on the Democratic side. There is not as much kind of like widespread support so far, at least, as we're seeing for this family bill or kind of increased spending. Right. So you got Joe Manchin, you got Kristen Sinema, right? And you've got the filibuster. So none of this stuff goes anywhere, right? Unless there's going to be either you get rid of the filibuster, right? Number one, right? And number two, pressure has got to be put on Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, and those folks that want to kind of be the kingmakers here. And frankly, I think that we might find out that Kristen Sinema might be the harder sell on this, because I think there's an easy pathway here to buy, you know, to get kind of buy-in from Joe Manchin. And that is that you, for that jobs bill, say, look, Manchin, you want the kind of the future industries of the kind of a clean power future to be located in West Virginia, then you need to guarantee the vote on the family's bill, right? On the family plan. And we need your vote there. Kristen Sinema, I think, is in a bit of a different kind of,
I think, position. Sinema is just in it for, like, I think, I'm not even going to say, like, in it for herself. Mm-hmm. I think she's just in it to fuck things up. Like, I really think, like, she thinks she has this brand and this appearance because of the way she dresses on the Senate floor that she can get away with fucking with people's lives. And that she's like going to go ahead with it. And I think that's going to be more destructive for her later on down the line. Like, I feel like she's doing this because she thinks that like her brand and her appearance can shield her from any fallout from this. And that she's just willing to just be a wild card in things and like do like have no end game. Like that's where I think she's at. I think Manchin has somewhat of an end game, but like, I mean, it's. I feel like it's already backfiring with her in her own home state, where she's becoming one of the least popular people. And she's really just self-destructing herself. And she's going to take the Democratic Party down with it because of like the bullshit games she feels like she can get away with and play. I mean, like, that's where I'm at with cinema at this point. And like, I don't, like, I personally think it's cool that she dresses the way she does on the Senate floor, because it's like, fuck those like traditional like norms and stuff like that. But like, you also have to not be a wild card or think you can get away with things like this,
right?
And simply fuck with people's lives,
right?
Just because you can.
Right. So, I mean, and they, you know, and that's all designed for like kind of like national drama, right? Really. I mean, that's really, it's about, you know, I would argue that it's, you know, it's more about celebrity than it is about actually kind of like power and exercising that power in a way that's for like for people. But, you know, if you want to know, like, you know, I know that the way that we see arguments or kind of discussion around these kind of bills that are coming out from the Biden administration on, say, like Twitter and social media, it can get kind of like binary pretty quickly, right? You know, either this is a good bill or it's a bad bill, right? Or we should support it or we should not support it, right? Or this is not enough, or it's not, you know, and again, this binary way of thinking is not valuable, I think, right? Does. So I want to give you like kind of examples. So when I look at this, bill, and I think like there's a lot of really good stuff in this, does that mean that I'm like, I'm satisfied? No. So what does that mean? So, well, then we have to be in a situation where we're going to put pressure upon legislators to kind of introduce amendments that would make something like this even more progressive, right? So let me just give you like one example of where I think that you could have a significant impact, right? So the investment that they're talking about in say preschool, right? For example, they've seen, and this is, I'm looking at the kind of New York Times kind of discussion of this right here. They've seen a preschool enrollment has declined by 25% during the past year, largely obviously because of the pandemic, right? About half of 4-year-olds and 40% of 3-year-olds attending pre-K, including remote programs, fell off. And only 13% of children in poverty were receiving an in-person school education. Now it says, unlike the preschool proposal, the child care proposal is not universal. It would offer subsidies to families earning up to 1.5 times their state's median income, which could be in the low six figures in some locations. It would also continue tax credits, approving the pandemic relief bill this year that offers benefits to people earning up to $400,000 a year. Okay, so now you've got like a preschool program that is universal, although there's this little pay for that's in there. And then you've got, so you got preschool. Okay, great. But now you got childcare, which is going to ask them to kind of pay more money, right? Which is, these things don't, they're not on the same page. So where you push is like, no, let's make like childcare universal, like they did in New York City, right? They did like pre-K, universal pre-K. And let's like, you know, make sure that everybody has kind of that for free. And let's make sure that childcare is also available for everybody, right? And not just up to 1.5% of their earnings. But we can actually push this out, right? It's a way of basically saying, yes, okay, we like what you've got here about the idea about kind of, you know, universal pre-K. Let's make it free for everybody. Right, let's just take that off the table. We were talking about childcare. Let's talk about subsidies that are going to help kind of for the long term. And there's some in there with the child tax credit, like for example. Same thing goes on. Well, the more that we can push for these programs to become universally available for everybody, I think the more that it benefits everybody. And it actually helps progressives win, right? Because these programs are extraordinarily popular. Once you start means testing everything, once you said that, okay, I make $100,000, my neighbor makes $110,000, like I qualify for this program, my neighbor does not, right? Once you start doing that, you're building up resentments, right? You're basically having a line, and that is precisely what the right plays on. This is why universal programs work. When this mean-tested garbage, one, it frustrates the hell out of people because it creates layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy that start getting in your lives, right? And it kind of, you know, pits people against each other. Right, people who might be—I mean, even you saw in the last relief package, we had the kind of the cap at $75,000. Right, and the other ones you see programs that kind of stop like in here, like 1.5% of the poverty line. Well, what if you're 1.6% of the poverty line? Then you don't qualify for the subsidies. Right, I mean, it's this kind of this stuff is deeply, deeply problematic. But like, good start. So the question is that where do we need to be in and what do we have to do in order to kind of push our legislators to basically make this more universal? And number two, really have a plan, an organizing plan for dealing with the fact that Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, and a handful of other Democrats are not necessarily on board yet. They need to have that pressure put on them. And on the second line, the filibuster is going to stand in the way of some of this stuff. Now, both the family plan and the jobs plan have the potential to go through reconciliation, because a lot of it does affect the budget. But that's it. Voting Rights Act, no. Right? So we need to do that. Anyways, so that was a big week, I got to say. And the fact that to cap that off too as well by coming out basically saying through an executive order that you're going to kind of increase the minimum wage for all federal contractors to $15 an hour is pretty significant. So I would say it's been a good week for working families this week, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the minimum wage, as it's a good thing, I think it's more performative. You know, if Biden would have really cared about the $15 minimum wage, he should have. They should push it through reconciliation.
I agree 100%. Right? I mean, 100%. But let's take the win where we got it. Right? I mean, the thing is, I agree with that 100%. Right? I think that he did say right in the speech we need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. But then the question is exactly where is it in the bill? Why is it not there? And where's the legislation? Right. And I think that Biden is kind of getting around this by basically saying, yes, let's raise it to minimum wage. I will sign it when it comes to my desk. But there hasn't been a strong commitment to end the filibuster and or a strategy to kind of deal with people like, you know, Manchin and Sinema and stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I got. I guess in other news.
Yeah.
Rudy.
Rudy. Rudy's melting.
You know, okay, so I mean, I was in the Capitol all day Wednesday, mm-hmm. and like, you know, working and getting shit done between going to different press conferences, writing up stuff for the PASHI or the Abscuff press conference, and like didn't realize that Rudy Giuliani had his house raided until like 9 o'clock at night. Like, talk about like that flew under the radar for me, but I guess it looks like he's going to jail. I mean, from watching some YouTube clips, it seems like they have enough to indict him right now if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think the game right now is that they're trying to figure out if he'll flip. I mean, that's what they're doing. I mean, this is how they work.
Like the
right?
mental competency to flip.
Well, that would be my read. I mean, I agree with you. I saw some reporting on this, basically. Well, you see now they think that Giuliani is going to. I'm like, really? In what world does Giuliani flip? I mean. And if he did flip, right? Can you really count on anything that's coming out of the guy's mouth?
Yeah. No.
I mean, really?
I think we've seen enough of Rudy Giuliani over the past like 5 or 6 months, going back to like the Four Seasons Hotel, Four Seasons Landscaping Company, to realize that he's not really playing with a full deck of cards.
Can I just say that happens to be one of my most favorite moments of the campaign? That is one of the best.
I absolutely wish I was there for that.
Oh my God.
Like I would like, that's something like Roxbury and I would just like be fucking laughing at the whole entire time. Just like, I mean, there's things that happen in Harrisburg where you just can't stop laughing at these people. Like that would just be like one of those press conferences. Like you're in the meeting, you're trying to like not laugh, but.
Dude, I'd be like catching flies the whole time. I'd be like, like the what?
Yeah, I mean, like there was a time I showed up to a press conference with Doug Mastriano and Kathy Barnett, who is just batshit crazy. Barnett is just absolutely insane down in, like Montgomery County, and it was the pro-life press conference or like the heartbeat bill one, and they just packed it with like all these religious people. It should have been a warning then. This was like October of 2019.
Yeah,
and I ate a whole entire fucking brownie. Beforehand,
Betty like Crocker.
What's that?
Betty Crocker.
Yeah, more like Betty Potter. But, yeah. but no, like I had to go to a climate change hearing with just like the worst climate deniers in the country.
I remember this, man.
And just like, I remember just walking into the press conference afterwards, and at that point, like I'm just like flying, like. And I just look at everything and I just can't stop laughing. Like of just how fucking insane it was. It would probably be like on that type of level. Like I literally had to put like my fist in my mouth. I was biting down on my knuckles. Like, and like a couple of the reporters, like Mysick and Roxbury, just looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. But yeah, crazy. Like that's just, that's just like the type of stuff. I mean, but I mean, I would have loved to have been at the Four Seasons.
Oh my
you
God.
Did you see Four Seasons put out a statement?
No.
This week they said something on social media and said, no, we did not get rated. It's like,
yeah, it's like, we did not get rated. We willingly sent them stuff or what? No. No, but yeah, so I mean, whatever. So we'll see what happens with Giuliani. I mean,
with Giuliani. I mean, you know, there has to be a ton of fucking communications on there about the election on his electronic devices. I mean, he met with multiple House and Senate Republicans in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Wasn't just like he had multiple phone calls with House Republicans. You know, I heard from those Republicans in passing. I cannot name them because it's supposed to be off the record. But you know, no, I mean, like they've had multiple, there were multiple meetings in the days and weeks after the election between Rudy Giuliani, leading up to the hearing, the Senate hearing, with Mastriano, with like Cutler, Corman, you know, various House representatives, the people who put their names on those letters and stuff like that. So I'm sure there's a whole lot of dirt on those fucking phones and computers.
I bet you there is. Yep, I bet you there is. Sorry, I just gotta write this real quick. Okay.
Who's responding?
No, I'm actually just kind of like just doing an update to Twitter. No, good. So let me ask you. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I do think there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to come out. I think this is going to be one of these things. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be speculating about stuff. There'll be probably some good reporting on it. My guess is what's going to matter, though, is when the FBI actually is going to file, file charges. And once we get to see what was actually on those devices, because they went in apparently had pretty direct ideas exactly what they wanted. So they knew what they were looking for. They went and they got it. And I do think,
and it's also with federal investigations, you could look into other things that you produce in a seizure and file other charges.
Right. And I think that's where the pressure is going to come from. The pressure is going to come from, you know, hey, look, yes, we're going to start handing off some of this stuff to New York prosecutors, right? We're going to hand this stuff off to, some other investigations. And do you really want to, you know, leave your family with nothing? Right. Or do you want to kind of spill and let us know what you know and tell us what you know? I mean, I think that's what's going to happen. And so, and we'll see. Like I said, and like we said already, I think Giuliani is, I don't know if he's competent.
So far,
to
fucking
make
gone again.
Yeah. Exactly. So we'll see, you know, so what that means, we'll see. But I do think it's going to be fascinating. And I do think that there's going to be repercussions down the line. So Giuliani, in my mind, he's a throwaway at this point. But whatever information is on there, I think is going to have some, say, real world impacts. And like you said, I think that some of that's going to come right back here to Pennsylvania. So that's going to be good.
I have a feeling a lot of that's going to be coming right back to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I agree. So let me ask you this. So, I mean, we saw the numbers come out from the census this week, and we see there's going to be some direct impacts even here in Pennsylvania about some losses of House seats. So we actually see, I think the biggest, obviously one of the biggest impacts is going to have in terms of the national picture is going to be Texas picking up a seat or picking up two seats and California and New York each losing one. Right. What that underscores right now, let's be really, really clear about this, is that there's going to be a redrawing of House district lines. That's number one. And number two, right, what is going to happen is that the Democrats' majority in the House is going to be like slim, if any. So it puts this added urgency to get shit done now. Right, because there is no guarantee that the Democrats are going to be able to hold on the majority in the House after 2022. Right, so I mean, I look at these numbers and I see like the gains of Texas, Florida, North Carolina, and Montana as being, you know, those are pickups for Republicans. Right, North Carolina is kind of, it depends. You know, we'll see how that goes. Colorado's also been kind of in that middle area. But you look at
Oregon's a loss.
A loss for
Democrats.
You think so?
Know. Yeah, or depending where the how they redo the maps. But I mean, like Oregon is pretty fucking crazy outside of like
the that West is Coast. True. That is right. That is true. Right.
Like it is a very crazy state. Like,
right. Although you look at the population, like the population increases in the state, right? They're really concentrated in the
Portland
in the West
and stuff like that.
Right. Exactly. So I think that might influence like where those districts get drawn. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the state as a whole is, you know, really, really mixed. It's very similar to Washington, right? So you got Washington State, the western part of the state, you know, then you go over the mountains and you're like in a whole different world of hurt.
It's almost like Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, seriously. But you know, so you're losing a seat from California, losing from New York, right? Pennsylvania is going to lose one. Well, I don't know how do you think that'll shake out?
I could see that loot being lost from Western Pennsylvania because of the population loss. And like the Southeast has been booming.
Same Lehigh Valley, right? Lehigh Valley, the population keeps on increasing, in the Lehigh Valley area.
Yeah. I think that seat like from in Pennsylvania is going to be lost,
by
from
Republicans. The West. It'll be a Republican loss of a seat, you think?
Or it's Connor Lamb's seat that's gone. So just another Republican, but
yeah.
I mean, Lamb was putting out a statement earlier this week, pretty much just like, I read it that he was like begging to keep his seat in place.
I mean, I just look at it like that. That's actually probably a good read because look, the Republicans are going to be able to dominate, the kind of the redistricting conversation.
Not really.
You don't
Not
think
in Pennsylvania.
So?
No, not in Pennsylvania. I think that is done by the Supreme Court. Well, I know the state legislative seats are done by the Supreme Court. So this week, the committees met, the Legislative Reapportionment Committee, which is four members, one from each caucus, legislative caucus. So the leaders of the four caucuses, you had Benninghoff, Ward, Joanna McClinton, and Jay Costa there. So like they were interviewing candidates today for a fifth person is how the process works. And since they never agree, it's always a tiebreaking. It's always tied
on
who they choose.
Right, right.
The Supreme Court jumps in and picks who is going to be on the seat. So
okay.
Since it's controlled by Democrats, the state maps will be drawn by a 3-2 LRC in favor of the Democrats. I think the congressional maps have to go through the committee process and all that from both committees. But if they really draw some like horrifically like gerrymandered maps, Wolf will veto them, and then the Supreme Court will also draw those maps.
Yeah. Well,
so
we'll see. Well, I mean, I think
like that's how I think that's how it should shake out with okay. The congressional stuff.
Well, that's good. I mean, well, your point about Connor Lamb's seat is a good one, though, you know, because like you could see some lines being drawn that in ways that are not unreasonable. Right. But that would basically be a loss, like a Democratic loss in the West.
I mean, like I could see Scott Perry's seat get drawn out into something different.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I mean, well, we can hope, but I mean, theoretically, the districts are going to get bigger, or they should. But like this one might get drawn out a little bit more, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Well, cool. And last, before we go to a break today, Matt Gaetz, man, he just won't get out of the news.
You know, like I was watching the Goodfellas scene when they were playing Layla this morning. That's pretty much like what I think's going on. The bodies are just turning up at this point with Gaetz and Giuliani. Like, I can't wait for Roger Stone to get back to fucking jail at this point. Like, great.
Well, so what did Matt Gaetz's wingman say?
Basically, that Gaetz had paid to have sex. That he and Gaetz paid to have sex with a 17-year-old.
Just wanted to put a nice fine point on that.
And other women. Like,
right. You know, so, like, I mean, they said, yeah. No, no, he's lying.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, we did that.
So
yeah.
I mean, it's horrible crime. It is, you know, pretty perverted, and he should definitely go to jail for it. So not trying to, downplay what Gaetz did, but
no, it just makes it more likely.
that he's gonna
pay for what he did. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, it comes down to that. Yeah. And like, so like, you can squirm all you want, little frat boy, but you're gonna be.
You know what's fucking hilarious about this Gates thing? Gates' spokesperson that he hired is Harlan Hill. So Harlan Hill, I think, now we definitely met him once at one of the progressive summits here in Harrisburg. Harlan Hill.
Name sounds so familiar.
Harlan Hill was the guy who said he was going to bring an army of people into Philadelphia during the vote counts.
Oh, the bow tie dude or something like this.
Yeah, right? The bow tie guy.
Yeah.
He said some really horrific shit, but we met Harlan Hill at like the 2013 or 2014. I went Dan Leach's party because he was working for Beth Becker at the time. So like Beth Becker was running a Democratic comm shop or a comm shop that like non that has like Republicans and Democrats working for there. So I'm gonna be looking through my my business cards to see if I have Harlan Hill's like original business card.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're gonna close out the segment with probably the best comment that referred that kind of puts the finest point possibly on this. Shanna says in the chat says, "Yep, Matt Gaetz, he's gonna pay for it, but not on Venmo this time." with that, we're going to go to break and we'll come back with the PA Focus. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you that you can help support this show. We're expanding. This is an exciting time. I can't even tell you how excited I am to tell you about some of the shows we're going to have coming up, which I'm thrilled. An additional show that we're going to be doing over the summer, which I'm very, very excited about. But I'm saying too much. So anyways, become a patron of this show, just go to patreon.com/rcpress, hit us up, become a patron for at least $5 a month, right? This is how we build out our progressive media infrastructure. This is how we kind of encourage it. And, you know, this is how we're kind of making sure that we have the ability to reach out and kind of connect up and network with other progressive media outlets across the state, right? Commonwealth, excuse me. And build power. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Breasts. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. That was the day that updated National Labor Relations Board rules regarding the formation of new unions went into effect. The rules cut down on the time between when workers announce that they want to hold an election to form a union and when that election can actually take place. The rule change was aimed at cutting down delay tactics used by employers to stop unionization. For example, one tactic used by employers was to engage in a long, drawn-out legal battle over which employees could belong to a new proposed bargaining unit. The NLRB's decision helped to curb some of the worst abuses of such tactics. Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, called the new rules, quote, "a modest but important step to ensure that workers who want to vote to form a union at their workplace get a fair opportunity to do so." Businesses and their allies in Congress, on the other hand, tried everything they could to fight the decision. The U.S. House of Representatives put forward bills that would make union elections much more difficult and attempted to gut the NLRB's funding. The bills did not make it through the Senate, but later that year, the opponents to the changes were able to get the new rules thrown out, claiming the vote at the NLRB did not follow proper procedures. Finally, in December 2014, the rule changes went into effect. The ability to hold a vote on whether to form a union is a core right for workers who want to improve their working conditions, their wages, and workplace safety. Throughout U.S. labor history, business interests have done everything they can to thwart the will of their workers to join together, and delaying union elections is but one of their tactics. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Hey, welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen, a.k.a. Shit Poster Von Moderna of the deck. Yes, indeed. He's right here. So I want to actually, before we kind of get into stuff in Pennsylvania today, I just want to put a question out to anybody who's out there. Anybody who does, has worked in OBS, worked with OBS, that's the open broadcasting software we use to kind of stream the show, or kind of worked in soundboards or music or things like this, if you want to hit me up at RagingChickenPress@gmail.com, and would be willing to just kind of like, let me ask you some questions. You've heard at the beginning of the show today, we have this persistent issue where when we're given the intro, we have the music intro comes in, the music starts to fade, and then I'm starting to talk over that, and at some point the levels just drop off and then they come back. And I've tried to mess around with the filters. I tried to kind of, take off compressor settings and things like this, and it keeps on coming back. So if anybody has any ideas, be willing to talk me through some of that stuff, please let me know and hit me up at RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. I'd appreciate it. So anyways, so back here in Pennsylvania, once again, it's been a relatively interesting week, I would say, with some big announcements right at the beginning of the week.
Yes. Biggest news of the week. if you ask me. No, we at Pennsylvania Spotlight have relaunched our website. We rebranded it a little bit. We are programming going more into progressive media reporting, continue our watchdog reporting analysis on the right wing right here in Pennsylvania. And yeah, the awesome people over at Commonwealth Communications, where JJ Abbott works, the former governor's spokesperson. His organization redid the website for us. It looks really nice. I think it looks a lot better than the previous website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
And we had Malcolm Kenyatta do an op-ed for us on the PRO Act on our launch date. We're looking to build this out. It's going to be fun. It's going to be like a next chapter in the organization. And it's going to be fun to see where this goes over the next couple of years.
It's good. I think it's sharp. I like the color scheme on it. I like the, it has a little bit more boomph to it. So kudos to all the folks who worked on that too as well.
I think the crop we use, not the crop, the template we use is very similar to the template that Spotlight PA uses. So
Spotlight PA. Who's that?
Some other group in the state, interlopers, that decided to try to take our name. No, they're Spotlight PA is doing really good work.
Yeah.
I know Angela Columbus really well from the Capitol, so she's definitely like one of my favorite reporters up there. And I love what they're doing and the different work they're doing. So they've got some great people.
We're
the originals, the OG.
Yeah, the OGs, exactly. Can I just say that's got to probably be one of the most like unfortunate like mess ups. I mean, maybe not for you. It probably drives you guys a ton of traffic, you got like what millions of possible combinations of what to do in order to kind of like distinguish yourself as kind of reporting and things like, and then we see that happen. And it's like, I thought that was so unfortunate.
I think it's great. Well, it's great for us because people think like we're putting out these reports all the time on Twitter. So we have fun with it. Like, Rosso has a lot of fun with that stuff when responding, like that's not us. You got to be thanking them over there. So, No, I think it's just like one of the funnier things that happened. They got a grant from the Spotlight Foundation from the Boston Globe, and that's why they're called Spotlight PA.
Yeah.
So, but we had the name first. So yeah,
there you go.
So, not giving that up. And also, I mean, like we've built a really good brand even before the Spotlight PA.
Oh, no, totally. Like, I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
Like, so, I mean, definitely not giving up the brand on that. I want to say special thanks to Scott Wagner and Mike Terzai, who, their blow-ups in public really helped us out along the way. it's been fun watching, where we've gone from the Wagner meltdown a couple years ago underneath the billboard. Never will forget that. And then, also getting... catching Terzai screaming at a retired teacher is one of the things that is also one of the funnier things I think we've pulled off over the past couple of years, because it was totally unprompted. you know, pretty much just a couple teachers, Laurie Lebo from PSEA threw a question out there, and Terzai just took the bait and decided to implode on a retired school teacher.
Ah, just beautiful. It's beautiful. It's like all the memories, all the memories. It's absolutely wonderful. Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, look, I mean, you guys, the work that you're doing over there is just fantastic. And it's, you know, it's, look, I mean, this is the kind of media work, this is the kind of research work, that is absolutely essential for any kind of movement, to be effective. I mean, if you look at, you know, I do this stuff in my academic work too as well. And when we look at, you know, I teach this class we're looking at in the fall, for example, it's called New Media Story Change, and looking at kind of the roles that, say, storytelling and things like this play in social movements. But as part of that, you're looking at like the history of, like, you know, social movements in media, is that they're, you know, so, like, activist media, progressive research kind of organizations or groups have been essential as kind of like partners in that, you know, in that movement. And, you know, a lot of times they grow out of the movements, which is very much, you know, kind of what we see with you all, with kind of a lot of other, you know, podcasts like this one that have kind of grown up. So it's just phenomenal to see this. And the fact that you're able to kind of actually, you know, have a resourced institution of doing this, so everybody's not doing this just on the fly as a second or third job, is even the better. So
yeah, kudos. I mean, last year, you know, even like before all this started, I mean, the stuff that we've been able to pull off, like, I, you never would have expected me to say, yeah, we got a candidate like Scott Wagner to like freak out underneath a billboard. Like, but I mean, that's like the research like Rosso was doing before I got there.
Right.
You know, like going through, like, oh, it took a week to like literally put that, finish off recording those court cases in the judicial system, which is just like absolutely insane. But I mean, like, that work and all, but also even last year, thinking back on it, like, I never thought I'd be, you know, watching a coup roll out in slow motion for my work.
Yeah.
And be like one of the only, you know, going to the reopen rallies and then going to the election rallies and being like one of the only people, I mean, like, literally, like, Roxbury and I were the only two journalists or writers or what, gadflies or whatever.
Or whatever the, like, hell you call yourselves.
No, I mean, like, the only two people who tracked this stuff over the past year.
Exactly.
And tracked it on a consistent basis and, you know, like, stumbled upon things, you know, like, for instance, a couple months ago, like, people meeting with Christian white nationalists on the Capitol steps out in the broad daylight, getting those photos of like Dush and all that stuff. I mean, like, a lot of it's just being in Harrisburg and being on the ground to watch that stuff. But I mean, like, hey, like, Nick Fuentes is coming in Harrisburg next week. Maybe I should sit across the street or sit like nearby and listen to see what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, yeah. So,
fantastic, man. Well, kudos. So every day, do go and check that out. That is at paspotlight.org. I got that right, right? I didn't get the wrong one, did I?
That's good.
Yes. PASpotlight.org. Go and check out the work. Go check out the new launch. Pretty freaking awesome to see this come to fruition.
Yeah. And it's like awesome that I'm able to couple my photography with the writing that we're doing. Like, Rossa did a really good story this week on UFCW having a press conference, getting legislation introduced to protect meatpacking workers. And so, like, you know, just being able to go there with my camera, get the photos of that. Same thing with the Seth Grove press conference. That story was published this week with the voter rights stuff. So, no, it's pretty cool. I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Cool. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Awesome. So, now that we're kind of like teasing up with the edges of crazy, so, and the right wing kind of insurrectionist, Doug Mastriano once again is kind of making a name for himself this week.
Yes, he is. Doug Mastriano and Supreme Court candidate here in Pennsylvania, Paul Patrick, were invited. I think this is total bullshit on their part. They were invited to speak, or they were, you know, not invited to speak, but their names appeared on a document to show them that they're going to speak. at the Upfront in the Prophetic QAnon conference happening in Gettysburg this June. Now Paula Patrick appeared on this guy's podcast last month. So, and then like Mastriano has been appearing on a bunch of QAnon based podcasts since the election. And, you know, they both issued statements denouncing QAnon. You know, I think this is more of a case. They're sorry because they got caught and had to back out because of the political ramifications because they got caught versus like, you know, actually going to it. So I think it's complete bullshit that they are denouncing QAnon when they are QAnon conspiracy theorists.
There you go. So, I wonder if they'll make a surprise appearance, like accidentally stop by and not realizing what was going on.
It is amazing. It's like, it just, it's, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. I don't know. I don't think this is a signal that QAnon is getting toxic within the Republican Party. I think these people know it's toxic, it's fringe, and they're going forward with it anyway.
Yeah, look, they know. Like,
and anybody who's caught their hands in the cookie jar,
right? And like, look, the QAnon people, like, if you're in like, or you know, in QAnon or QAnon associated kind of, you know, like organizations or belief systems, you're already used to like, you know, politicians kind of distancing themselves from you because they do this, and you pick up all these signals. Really? Look, they're really on board with us, but they had to do this in order to kind of keep on. They make up all this shit anyways, right? So it's not going to affect, it's not really going to have any significant impact on the kind of the distancing of this stuff, right? You know,
and it just happened to be in Gettysburg.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, seriously.
Like, 5 minutes away from where Mastriano lives.
Exactly. I mean, is it like, really?
Like, and like, you know, Mastriano talks about Gettysburg in every single fucking address, exactly. Or every speech he does. This is where Giuliani like did the hearing at the hotel.
Right. This is more like, you know, I get him like calling up, hey Q, listen, I'm not even going to have even a remote shot of kind of winning the nomination for governor if I come to this event. So I'm going to have to say some things and everything. It's going to be like, it's okay, Doug. You'll be fine. We know you're with us. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like that kind of conversation.
And did you find out, did you see like recently that they recently discovered or they figured out who the QAnon main QAnon proponent was?
No, I mean, the people who were running the boards.
Well, like the person who started it, they figured out
who started it,
the 8chan guy.
Oh, no, yeah. But they started the board and stuff, right? But I mean, I thought
he's like the actual Q himself.
Oh, there you go.
Like,
that's beautiful.
Like, this reporter was doing an interview and the guy slipped and pretty much like admitted to it, and they had like a nervous laugh, and then the reporter just started laughing like, oh my god.
You're like, we I'm figured here. It out. I'm in the lair, I'm here, and I'm like, gonna make it out. Okay, end of interview, we'll see you later. It's like, got that on tape, let me check it. That's good.
Yeah, so that was on like CNN a few weeks ago. But no, I mean, like, yeah, like the QAnon people are fucking insane.
Oh my god,
yeah. I mean, you know this firsthand.
indeed, right here in my own freaking backyard. Right, seriously. But before we get to my own backyard,
you want to segue into that?
Let's do it. Let's just do my own backyard. Okay, let's do it.
I was teasing it for you.
I know. It was a good tease. All right, we'll go to it. All right, so the Pan Ridge School District. Now, you remember Cyril Mikulenko, right? He's a progressive columnist now for the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer. He's been on the show. We've been talking about this, and one of the things that he had covered a couple weeks back was how Turning Point USA, right? This kind of right wing organization, which we've talked about extensively on this. Charlie Kirk is the kind of the leading guy on this one. You know, they're kind of trying to infiltrate college campuses and kind of do all sorts of stuff. Anyways, they've been making inroads into high schools and junior highs. And of course, right here in my backyard, Penn Ridge School District, they've done just that. Right. They've Turning Point USA has kind of made its way into the school. Now, part of the reason for that is because we have school board members that are, you know, like either QAnon or QAnon adjacent. Right. Joan Cullen is kind of one of the main culprits, who is when there were students at Penn Ridge who actually walked out of school as part of a strike in support of gun, you know, as after the Parkland shootings. They were supportive kind of gun reform, stand up in solidarity with the Parkland students. She came out and basically was calling students Nazis or Marxist and, you know, and communist, and that, you know, saying horrible things about them on, you know, on Twitter. Like, she's the head, she was the head of the school board at the time. And she's also kind of like regularly kind of retweets kind of right wing conspiracy theorists, white nationalist stuff, QAnon conspiracy theorists and so on. Right. Well, and that kind of like is not limited to only Joan Cullen. Right. But it's limited. You know, it's kind of expanded. Kind of there's a network of these folks, right, kind of right in this area. So we have school board elections coming up. Right. And you've got a group of, you know, it's like, oh, God, this is really disturbing to me, I have to say. Right. But so let's just get to this. Oh, what did I just do? OK, I'm sorry. I just accidentally missed. Here we go. So we have this one group of people that are, their names are, I hate to pronounce them, Christine Baticki, Jordan Blomgren, Ricky Chaikin, and Bob Cormick. Three of them, those three women at the top of the thing there, they are, they have organized kind of anti-masking events in local grocery stores, have been caught on tape, basically saying that they have medical conditions, so they can't wear a mask. They're, you know, you have their Ricky Chaikin in particular has, you know, she's got her parlor account with her, you know, burning
Q flag. How many of these people are in D.C. on the 6th?
Well, that's a good question. I know Ricky Chaikin was. I'm not sure about the rest of them. This is, I'm going to talk more to Cyril about this. But these folks are running for the school board, and they're running on this platform, which is kind of, you know, like
off the fucking walls.
It's like it draws from. Well, it's one of these perfect things. It's the way that
I'm
these
surprised
people,
it's missing like the 1776 report from Trump.
Oh, I'm sure it's there. I mean, they've got a bunch of links. If you go to their webpage or their Facebook page, they've got links to all their like their platform stuff and kind of responses to it. So right now, really the hot button issue, which is kind of they're taking up, is like trying to keep critical race theory out of our schools. Right. And they have the links to all these kind of quote unquote documentaries, which are produced by these kind of far right kind of like organizations, kind of and basically fanning the flames of kind of, you know, kind of white fear, white angst, white nationalism and racism as a way to kind of like, you know, prop up their candidacy by saying that, you know, our school is being invaded by people of color. Basically what could have come here. And we want nothing but, and this goes to one of their other platform things about nothing but American exceptionalism and love of country, right, should be at the priority of our school district. Right. And so those are the two things. And really what they mean by American exceptionalism, love of country means whiteness. Right. And that's why we have to keep out critical race theory. And that's why they say diversity of cultures, background, experience, opinions, perspectives and thoughts need to be part of it. And what they mean by that is that people like Turning Point USA and other batshit crazy thing needs to be kind of taken seriously within the grounds of schools. That's what they're talking about. And these folks have a very good shot at kind of making it out of the school board. There's a guy literally down the street from me. He's got these huge billboards. He's kind of like a kind of fairly big wig in the Republican Party in Bucks County in our region, our area, in Penn Ridge area. But, you know, he's got big billboards all out for these four, right? Joan Cullen's name is not even on it, right? But these four are, right? And these folks are running. And we've, you know, when we talked to Cyril on this show not too long ago and out to Coop Live, Cyril Micheletko, he was basically saying, he's like, look, you know, the Bucks County Republican Party, right, has not, you know, gotten rid of these folks. As a matter of fact, Bucks County Republican Party has made alliances with these far right organizations.
This is what these Republican parties are becoming.
Well, this is exactly
the machine, like, disintegrating in the Southeast.
Well, yeah, exactly. And this is what, this is consistent with the reporting, right? We talked about this either last week or 2 weeks ago, where we saw that most of the people that were, that went to the insurrection were coming from counties where we've seen the biggest demographic shifts. Right. And they were not so for these kind of like deep red pockets, like in the middle of nowhere in the center of Pennsylvania where the folks came from. No, they came from counties like Bucks County, where their long-term comfort in their whiteness and their long-term comfort in their kind of Republican dominance and their kind of like way of life, right, has now in their mind come under threat. Right.
And
because
also, like,
because they're losing control. And so they're losing their dominance or their kind of like, you know, their common sense dominance of the area. And as a result, you know, this is what's happening.
Now, okay, so is it the type of thing where my parents live in like Montgomery County and Horsham, like, which is like pretty much just as batshit crazy. Democrats control it more than like where you're at in like Penridge. But like you still got a lot of reactionary Republicans who still have their Trump train flags up.
Seriously. Like, seriously.
Like, and I mean, like, my type of thing is, it's like, okay, like, are these areas becoming more racially diversified? Like, I don't see that change happening when I go home. I don't know if I'm home enough. Or are they upset that, like, the Democrats are winning elections and, like, there's Democrats moving in and it's the Democrats that are the problem?
It's both of those things.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Right. So we have,
I'm not home enough in the Philly area, the suburbs, to see that play out, but you know, I could also see this being a type of thing where, you know, you back with Jordan Sexton Yates' book about how Democrats are evil. Like, and it's the Democrats that are ruining things.
Right.
And now, like, it's the Democrats who are winning these races.
Right. But I don't even think it's at the level of, yes, obviously in a school board election like this with these nut jobs who are running, this is a party specific thing, right, with Democrats. But really it has to do with, you know, what is happening with the Republican base in terms of what that discourse is about. Right. If you follow what's happened on Fox News as Fox News has tracked with Trump and Carlson. Right. Exactly. This is kind of what's in people's brains. So, like, say, for example, if you have, there is a diversity requirement, right, you know, as part of, say, Pennsylvania Department of Education. Right. You should read a wide range of stuff, not just kind of like white supremacist stuff. Right. You know, you should, like, you know, read a wide range of stuff. Why? Because the country is that way. The state is that way. Right. So we learn more of our history. Right. And so you couple that with the kind of like national media outlets from Fox News and so on, and with these kind of right wing nationalist like organizations on the ground, right, who are actually doing the get out the vote stuff, that's what produces this. So even in those neighborhoods or even those areas that are not seeing huge influx of kind of Latinos from New York City, right, or, you know, to use what they, no. It's like, even in those areas, that's the mentality. So when their kid comes home with a book by a black person, right, they think that's critical race theory. Right. And they're just like literally buying hook, line and sinker this idea that, you know, that our schools have to preserve this kind of like Western white traditions. And that's really what it comes from. And,
yeah, I mean,
what, like, and you couple that with the fact that, like, again, this is the part in Bucks County where the Republican Party has basically been hollowed out. Right. So your figureheads of the party, the people who are still in leadership positions, are relatively, you know, Bucks County is always, well, has
like Gene DiGirolamo is your county commissioner.
Yeah. And you have those people are, say, relatively, like, still, for that matter,
they respect it.
Well, yeah. And they carry on that tradition in Bucks County, which has been, you know, we have relatively moderate Republicans. Right. Although that's gradually changing. But so those folks still are in positions of leadership. But meanwhile, the base, right, is activated by these kind of right-wing organizations that have been kind of allowed to kind of grow inside the Republican Party. And now they're the ones with the powerhouse get out the vote stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, we, you know, even in 2018, I was tracking that Wagner event in Jenkintown. Like, that had the feeling of being at a fucking Klan rally. Like, that, I mean, just like the shit that people were saying in there. There was a couple of like alt-right people sitting right in front of me. You know, this is where I record the woman getting called Young and Naive by Scott Wagner. Like, by hearing the stuff that they were talking about, like the people around me and everything, was just absolutely batshit crazy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, for a governor's race in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania, like a governor candidate, Republican candidate visiting, like, it was like the base. It was alt-right. It was like, you know, just people like saying the most racist fucking shit. I'm just like wondering if I'm going to make it out there alive tonight. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that type of stuff. Like, these people are just fucking insane. Like, and yep. It's like, you know, and these people start running for office in 2018, 2019. Like, obviously they're not winning because they're in Montgomery County, but like, you have this brand of Republicans running for school boards and local town councils now, because the original old guard party is just gone. It just evaporated.
Yep.
And I feel like it just collapsed overnight. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, their whole entire infrastructure collapsed.
Well, I think that's right. And it's happening.
Look, holding power in the Southeast. And then now it's just like, it's just rot.
Right. And I think that, and I think, again, you follow where the energy has been. Look, Republican Party has had a history of kind of, you know, cozying up with the extreme elements within their party. And now those extreme elements really represent, you know, the core. So, like, for example, Cyril, I keep on plugging Cyril here, but Cyril Mikulenko, he's got a new piece out that's called Meet a School Board Candidate, Jamie Davis, right? He's been doing this kind of, you know, let's kind of introduce you to new folks. And he leads this up with, I'll read you the opening paragraph on his piece, and you can check out his stuff at Cyril Mikulenko at .substack.com. It says, Time Magazine recently published an article entitled QAnon Candidates Are Winning Local Elections. Can they be stopped? This question is especially pertinent for Pennsylvania's first congressional district, ground zero for the QAnon wing of Trump's Republican Party. Local right-wing extremists are trying to infiltrate local school boards throughout the district, even primarying incumbent Republicans deemed too moderate. This is why it is so important that voters actively support candidates who will defend public education from these political arsonists who want to burn down the belief that good governance, smart public policy, forward thinking, and accountability is what voters should care about, and instead make school board elections a battleground for unhinged culture wars. Right? And I think, I don't know how you say it better than that. And I think that is precisely what is going on right now in the Pennridge School District. It is also happening in some other districts in Bucks County. So, you know, and these folks are networked. Like, one of the things that has been interesting for me is you're following some of these folks, you know, these on their Facebook page. If you look at what are the businesses that are hosting their fundraisers, right? Who are the people that are endorsing them? Because it provides a map to a certain degree of where this assembly is actually happening. Right. So it's a good way to track things that are going on. So anyways, that's what's going on here. I will have more of this kind of coming up here. I think I'm going to have Cyril back on fairly soon to kind of talk about some of these developments and talked about some of the races here. Because, you know, we've got the primaries that are coming up on May 18th, that the elections these are going to be very, very consequential elections. What I hope to do over the summer in a more kind of like narrow form is to have some of the school board candidates on. I know that doesn't have the same kind of like, you know, statewide appeal or kind of that a lot of folks who tune into this station or tune into the show or come here for, but at least as kind of like an addition to our regular podcast, I'd like to kind of bring some of these folks on just to kind of help give a little bit of a signal boost to kind of what's actually happening in here. And just to try to get the word out and spread it out with what's actually happening. Also with information about how you can actually support these candidates. I mean, I'll do whatever I can in order to try to prevent our school board from, you know, falling into, you know, the QAnon pyre. So, it's pretty crazy. You know, it's something, Sean, when you start seeing this stuff, you know, I was thinking a lot about this actually the past couple of weeks after seeing some of the, you know, the stuff on the school board, on Pennridge school board elections, watching, you know, some of the reporting that you were doing, you know, years ago and tracking some of these, you know, these white nationalist movements, these kind of right wing conspiracy theorists and so on, and then have that kind of like show up at my front door, basically, right, has been something. I mean, not that we haven't been trying to like sound the alarm about this for a long time, but seeing it actually kind of show up in this way is disturbing.
Yeah.
So anyways,
and more happy news
PA, state of higher education is going to be gone. So, but before I get there, I'll say this as a way of kind of closing out. I know Sean's looking for looking to take a little mental break while I talk about that. But don't take too long. No, I won't. But I do think I want to point to this. I really think this is interesting to pay attention to.
This was a topic on our phone call this morning.
What, about Brandy Levy?
Yes, and Andy Hoover was telling everyone about the case and how they think it's pretty awesome that like it's gotten this far.
Yeah.
So the ACLU, yeah, you go ahead and I'll explain, recap it.
Okay. So let me, I'll give you, for people who don't know what this is about, I'm going to read just the first good thing, a report from NPR, because it's really, so it says, facing its biggest student speech case in half a century, the Supreme Court seemed to be looking for a narrow exit door on Wednesday. At issue was whether schools may punish students for speech that occurs online and off campus, but that may affect school order, quote unquote. The case has been billed as the most important student speech case since 1969. That landmark ruling came at the height of the Vietnam War, where Mary Beth Tinker and four other students went to court after they were suspended for wearing black armbands to school to protect the war. Here, in that one, by a vote of 7-2, the High Court ruled at the time, for the first time, that kids do have First Amendment free speech rights of school, unless school officials reasonably forecast it will cause disruptions. Now, this Wednesday case, this Brandy Levy one, right, the same, the biggest one since then, because this is not political speech, right, in any kind of direct way. So that raises a different question again about, you know, what are we talking about here? Basically, she just basically said she was pissed off, right, that she didn't make the varsity team in cheerleading. She went into Snapchat and says, you know, F the school, F the cheer, F everything, blah, 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 blah. And then she was suspended from her team, right? And this is kind of like taken off pretty quickly and is going to have, you know, it will raise really significant questions about what control schools, right, and I would say by extension some other organizations, because this will set a precedent, right, will have to be able to monitor us outside of our places of work or places of schooling, right? So I mean, that's kind of my sense of it. So this is really a case to watch, and the fact that it's rooted right here in Pennsylvania is something else. So what did you got on this one, Sean?
Work just popped up. remember that documentary we were talking about last night?
Yeah.
We found it.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
So
say no more. Say no more.
It's off the fucking rails.
Okay.
So, yeah, Andy Hoover was on our phone call this morning with the, you know, our comms 2 call. I'm talking to all the communicators in the state about this case. They feel very confident that they're going to win this.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a slam dunk on their end. Because it's not political speech.
And it looks like actually you've got an alliance, a certain kind of alliance between liberals and conservatives in the court.
Yes, a lot of conservative organizations have signed on to this, filed briefs in support. A lot of progressive liberal groups signed on into this. They have won every court case, hands down, pretty decisively, from all the way up to the Supreme Court, or up to the circuit courts of appeals and stuff like that. They never thought that this was going to become a Supreme Court case when this happened 4 years ago. Like, they thought, like, we'll just send a letter asking not to do this, and that'll be the end of it. And no, 4 years later, it was Brandy who wanted to keep on pushing this and winning. And, you know, like, the school district is just fucking wasting resources pretty much and losing in court every time. So, I mean, if this makes, like, there will be oral arguments about this in June. I think they've been on the ACLU-PA has been on every news agency, like news channel talking about this.
Yeah.
Just about everywhere in the state has talked about this. A lot of the major publications have talked about this. And tomorrow, like, Reggie or the statewide director will be on MSNBC talking about this case tomorrow morning. So, like, yeah, like, they never thought, like, something like this, a minuscule, like, court case, like, or a minuscule, like, retaliation against a student in school 4 years ago will become something like this. Brandy's now she's graduated and she's now a student at Bloomsburg.
Oh, is she?
And still going forward with this.
Nice.
Yes.
I wonder what she thinks about consolidation and mergers. Maybe she could do some Snapchatting for us. Excellent. So, I mean, definitely, this is a case to watch. I'm just, you know, I came across this over the week. I've been trying to dig into it a little bit and to kind of see what's at stake. And it really has far-reaching consequences. I mean, you know, as more and more of us are kind of realizing that you have, say, employers or kind of teachers or school administrations that are kind of reaching out and monitoring our social media outside of like the areas that they're supposed to be dealing with this stuff. That's really problematic, right? And for a whole range of speech and stuff. And so you could see where the both the right and the left on the court, if there's not really a left, but the liberal end of things on the court, why that this would be kind of concern, but good stuff. I'm glad to see that going forward. All right. What? Sorry.
No, I'm just laughing about this.
Okay, good.
Basically, Mastriano has a documentary that's fucking batshit crazy. And we found it.
Boom!
Like there's a promotional video going around, and yeah. So I'm not going to give you more because it's pretty hard to find, but we found it.
There you go.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
There you go. Nice.
Get getting some
popcorn. Popcorn. Here you go. All right. So we're going to close out today. So obviously, this is a huge week for the PA State System of Higher Education, PASHE. We've been talking about this for on and on. I think I'm going to do a separate show on this because there's I do recognize that I don't want this to kind of run away and into a long discussion. I've already been talking about this on social media. I've been posting things up. But basically, the gist of it is this, is that there is Chancellor Greenstein, who's the who's Governor Wolf's appointee, right? Basically the chair, head the state system of higher education. He was brought on back in, was it 2018 or something, to help with this, a transition for quote unquote system redesign. And he came in initially and he promised to be like a collaborator. He wanted to work, everyone would work together. He wanted to kind of, you know, make sure the system is going to be let's have new bold, new initiatives and ideas, all that kind of stuff. And what ends up happening is that he puts this proposal out, which is calling for the merger of 6 schools into 2, right? That means Bloomsburg, Lock Haven, and Mansfield merged into one called Northeast, even though Lock Haven is basically near the dead center of the state. Put that aside. And then in the West, it'll be California, Clarion, and Edinburgh merged into one out there. And there's a whole series of bunch of problems with that and so on. And there's a huge disconnect between what the chancellor has been saying, that everyone's been included, and what faculty have experienced, what students have experienced, and so on. Big pushback against these consolidations, especially as it turns out that there's not a lot of concrete answers to baseline questions. For example, Chancellor keeps on saying, yes, everybody's going to have keep their unique identity. They're still going to have their sports teams and everything like this. But they have not gotten any kind of concrete information from the NCAA that's basically going to say that you can have 3 accredited sports teams at 1 accredited school. Right. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Right. And they don't have an answer to that. Also came out in the hearings this week was that they do not have a final word from Middle States, which is the accrediting body of the universities, that the programs, specific programs that have been accredited by Middle States are going to be able to kind of stay. Right. After these schools are forced together. Right. So that was what was coming before the Board of Governors this week on Wednesday. And, you know, cut to the chase, the Board of Governors like called his thing. Cynthia Shapiro, the chair of the Board of Governors, called his presentation inspiring. And they voted 7-2, basically, or I said 11-2, I think. But only 2 people voted against the report, and they kind of welcomed it. So therefore, now it's kicked off a 60-day commenting a 60-day commenting period where there'll be a couple public hearings are scheduled, only 2 at this point. My guess is that's going to increase because of pressure from legislators. But there's a public comment area where you can basically give your public comments. But the way that public comments have been dealt with in the past, there's no guarantee that it's going to mean anything. This is, I think the Chancellor Greenstein is pretty much approaching this as kind of like, yeah, we got to do this, but then we're going to launch this in 60 days. That merger would take place in 2022. Now, so his, like, what is it? Let's look, a 400 and, what do I have? A 400 and, I can't remember exactly, 460 whatever page report came out with these 2 merger plans that were very sparse on details. There was a Senate hearing this week where State Senator Lindsey Williams, why am I drawing a blank? She, Lindsay Williams. Yeah, yeah. Okay. For some reason, I was like, wait a minute, that's not her. Anyway, she was like really, really pointed in her questioning and got really frustrated at one point, basically calling, saying the actual formatting of the document made it difficult even to read, right? That some of the charts that were included in this couldn't be, you couldn't read them in a PDF format, you couldn't read in an online format, and it made no sense that it wouldn't do this. And there weren't answers to basic questions. Like, so for example, the chancellor keeps on asserting that student support, and she's like, and she said, okay, look, I understand that you did some sort of student survey. It's like, well, we didn't do this. We had these kind of like people do this. It happened in the Northeast. And she's like, where are the results? And he's like, oh, well, we can make it available. And she's like, the fact that you're giving us this report and you're saying you're making claims about students, you're not showing us the data and showing us these reports is a problem. Right? Is that this should have been included in the report. If you're making claims based upon what students said, then we need to see the data. We need to know how many students were interviewed, how many students responded, how many, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there you have it. So there was like some pretty strong pushback, particularly from her. I was very happy to see that. In the end, what happened before the board voted on it, there was a report that was commissioned by the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center from the Political Economy Research Institute out of the University of Massachusetts that was looking at the plans as they were, right, in the fall of 2020, right? And then he spent whatever, I think he said 6 months reviewing all the data, putting together his reports and so on. And in the end, right, again, cut to the chase, the report finds out that basically the what this is going to amount to is about 1,500 direct job losses at the state system universities. Those are going to be strongest felt in those universities that are being consolidated or being merged together, but it's going to happen kind of system wide. So when I was looking at the charts, for example, as they show, like Kutztown University, my home university, is not one of the universities that is being shut. However, in those plans that are showed, you know, right here, right, we got this chart that shows that Kutztown University, the expectation is that they're going to get rid of about 145 jobs. Right now, that is faculty and staff together. Let me be clear about that. But it does show that if of the job loss, right, you're talking about of the 1,531 jobs that are going to be eliminated due to this plan, right, 809 of those are faculty jobs. Right, that's about 40% of the cuts are going to hit there. So we're talking about major impact, and it's going to be hitting communities the hardest that need the jobs the most. Right. So in those regions, right, that again, the state system of higher education was put together to be a system so that you could guarantee that you could deliver high quality public higher education at an affordable price in areas of the Commonwealth, right, that could not support it on their own. That's the whole idea. You want to provide access to everybody. Right. And those are the areas like Mansfield, like Clarion, right, like Lock Haven, that you're talking about either one of the Pasha University is either the largest employer or next to the largest employer in the area, has kind of well-paying, good benefits, union jobs, right? Those are the ones that are most at risk. And so in addition to those 1,500 plus jobs that are going to be eliminated directly from these cuts, right? In this report, it kind of calculates it out that you're basically talking about a total loss of jobs to the Commonwealth of 2,263. And they calculate that by looking at, okay, the university buys X number of things from this distributor, right? What's going to be the reduction to that? So therefore, what's going to be the loss of that income? And then the what they're called the induced ones, where, you know, I'm like making, say, decent money in a small town, and I'm spending that money at local restaurants, I'm spending that money at local stores and kind of in the area and contributing to the economy. My job goes away, all that goes away too as well, negatively affecting those restaurants and those local stores. So it's calculated into that too as well. So you're looking at about 2,200 plus jobs eliminated there. And there's a lot of other kind of consequence of this. So we're in a 60-day period right now of comment, and the organizing is just starting to kick up on this. So you're going to hear a lot more about me, from me in this in the coming happening in the coming weeks. Like I said, I'm going to set aside and do some special shows that are specifically devoted to this, because I don't want this show, our regular Friday News Roundup, to become just dominated by this. Obviously, I'll be doing updates here, but we'll be bringing some other folks to talk about some detail. I would strongly recommend checking out the show that I did with ABSCUF President Jamie Martin and Out to Coop Live this past Monday. That's on our regular podcast feed. You can find it on our YouTube page too as well. But kind of in the end of thing, you know, the real question at this point is that, you know, people need to be putting some pressure on Governor Tom Wolf, because ultimately Chancellor Greenstein is Tom Wolf's guy. And Governor Wolf, remember ABSCUF, right, the faculty union that I belong to, we were the first out of the gate to support Governor Tom Wolf and his initial run for the governor, over the governorship. And Tom Wolf looks like he has not been very much out there and seems to be perfectly okay with having his legacy being the destruction of Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. So there's going to be more information about putting pressure upon Tom Wolf to basically say, you got to reject this plan, and look for more organizing coming up in the weeks to come. Anyways, Sean, anything else for the good of the order in Pennsylvania?
No, nothing too much going on. I think I'm pretty good right now.
Yeah, exactly. I can imagine what the rest of your day is going to look like now. So it's going to be very happy, I think. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be right back after this quick break with this week's Last Call. Want to remind you, you can become a patron of this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Just $5 a month. It's like a freaking beer a month, right? You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for a little $5 a month. Patreon.com/RC Press. We'll be right back in this video. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought Pull No Punches progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Hey everybody, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, back here with Last Call. We talk beer news, we talk space news, whatever else is kind of going on in our lives. I want to just real quickly kind of respond to something that came up in a YouTube chat, and this is from Nick. And I'm not sure if this is kind of what you're getting at. The comment says, I wonder about if that counts vacancies. The reason I wanted to just kind of chime in about this real quickly about this, because there's been some discussion on Facebook and some Twitter, among faculty, about these numbers in the report, the Perry report. So let's be clear about what those numbers are. So based upon all of the information about the plan that was available this past fall, all right, this was saying what the plan anticipated as being the losses, needing to get rid of this number of jobs in order to support the plan. So some people have been chiming, have been all kind of like get worked up. So yeah, but this doesn't count like people who've already retired, and this doesn't kind of count. Like, he's like, so basically there's numbers. No. The point is the plan pushed for that stuff. Right. So yes, some people have already lost their jobs. Right? Yes, it's true. Some people have already been their job, but this is the idea. And that's what that report focuses on. The report focuses on the elimination of jobs that are necessary. That is why it calls this a like one of the most major job losses, like a shutting down a plant, right? It's a huge job loss. That is what is at the core. So as much as he wants, as Chancellor Greenstein wants to use this pretty language to talk about what he's doing about innovation and use all these Silicon Valley words, really what this is about, it's about massive austerity and reductions of stuff. So in terms of vacancies, it means that some people leaves, it means that person is never going to get rehired. Yes, that is a job loss. That is a decrease in the number of jobs at that particular place. That means when they get rid of a groundskeeper, they don't replace that groundskeeper. That means when they get rid of the custodian, they don't replace that custodian. That means like they did at Cheney, when they get rid of all the librarians so that Cheney no longer has a librarian on campus, let alone a library, that never comes back. That is factored into the plan. That is what is at the core. So I just want to be clear about that because, you know, people do some weird stuff when they look at kind of like honest to goodness studies and projections about something that goes on and they don't want to believe it. So they kind of look for ways to kind of say, no, that it can't be true. And I can't tell you how many times since I've been at Kutztown University that is the freaking conversation we have to have. It's like, because you think that I'm being extreme, or like a report from freaking political economists are being extreme, that you just want to kind of say, no, it can't be true. And that's easier to believe than organizing to stop it. So anyways, I'm going to shut up now because this stuff. And Nick, I'm sorry. I don't mean that. I'm not saying that you're saying that. I think that was a legitimate question. And I think I'm just saying that I see this chiming in from the edges that really concerns me because it's like that's the kind of crap that will guarantee the state system of higher education goes down. And look, I'm not in that camp. You want to be in that camp? Fine. But not me. So, yes, Nick, the specific question, and I'm sorry, Nick got me all worked up, and it wasn't Nick. Nick was asking a good question. So I think that does factor in some of the vacancies that are a result of the cuts that began before that report was released. Okay, great. Anyway, Sean.
Happy news.
In space news.
I'm just going to turn off my computer again for another 10 minutes.
No, I'm going to go through real quick. Got cool stuff. You saw Mars helicopter Ingenuity. I've just been fascinated by watching it all week. There's been, we actually got like its last flight a few days ago. Actually was able to kind of capture the Perseverance rover on its flight back to its original starting point. This shit just amazes me. It missed its fourth flight attempt yesterday. They had this problem initially when they were trying to do the first ever flight, and there was an issue with the software getting switching over to flight mode. That happened again. The last time they put the software fix out, it was like, they said, look, this is going to work as a fix about 85% of the time. So they're just not sure if it's a new problem or if it's the same problem kind of reemerging again, but it's pretty cool. Major happenings in the kind of international kind of like space race, if you will. China launched its main module for its first permanent space station. In addition, they have their eyes on kind of like areas for establishing lunar colonies or lunar bases, we should say. And they're also next month, they're going to have their first rover going to be land on Mars. So like really just kind of rapidly developing scenarios that are happening in kind of international space stuff. Crew 2, SpaceX's Crew 2 is going to have to wait up in the space station a little bit longer. Crew 1 will have to wait a little bit longer, even though Crew 2 has already arrived back at the on the space station because the weather on Earth is not kind of cooperating so much. So I think it'd be kind of pretty cool to be a kind of an astronaut being like, oh, I guess we'll go to stay around, stick around. I know like I handed off my work to you guys here, but I guess I'm just going to hang out in the cupola and kind of take pictures of the Earth.
I think that's I wonder how you like handle time up there. Like, you know what I mean? Not like actual, like a 24-hour day.
Totally. I mean, I think they try to schedule it, I think, as a 24-hour day, but you see, I think it's like 19 sunrises in a day, right? Because that's how fast the ISS is circling the Earth. And so how, like, I think it's got to be like stressful. Mind-bending. Well, it just kind of, it's got to mess with your head, right?
Oh yeah, stressful. I'm like, you're like, yeah, that's what I meant by stressful, like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do think and the last SpaceX flight they had a bunch of CBD sent up, so maybe that'll help. No, they did not. but that might be a solution. I don't know.
Oh, don't worry, I'm trying to get some edibles this weekend for that.
I bet you are.
Documentary I'll be watching.
Yeah, exactly. They're fantastic. So that's kind of pretty cool. So they'll be up there for a little bit longer. I was also fascinated to see that the crew too, as they were going up, were concerned about getting hit by space junk. So that's been something that the European Space Agency has been tracking quite a bit. And there's increasingly trying to kind of come up with solutions. Well, how do you actually get rid of this stuff? But as it goes to show that what we do on this planet is being just exported at, like, into there. That the fact that we leave a bunch of shit floating around in the orbits that could potentially kill people, you know, seems pretty par for the course for human civilization. So Western civilization in particular. But here you go. That. Anyways, let's get to some beer news. That's what I really want to get to today. So we've got two new beer releases coming for Free Will this week. You got the Strawberry Banana Mash. That is a sour ale with strawberry, banana, vanilla, and milk sugar. Classic combo. This has been out before. They say it brings to mind memories of squeezing go-gurts, fresh blended smoothies, and a mushy juice soaked in banana pieces at the bottom of a fruit salad. As always, fully fermented, fruit only at 7.5 ABV. Fantastic stuff. I had that last year. It surprised the crap out of me. The strawberry mash too, as well. That when I first had the strawberry mash last year, I was like, "Oh, we'll see." And it was like, blew my mind how good it was. This one's good too, as well. A little on the sweet side, but they don't overdo it, so that's a good thing. Longful Hunt. This one is out. It's a DDH double IPA brewed with flaked oats and wheat, hopped in the kettle with Mosaic, then dry hopped with Moteku, Idaho Gem, and even more Mosaic in cryo form. They say it's soft and fruity with notes of candied tangerine, summertime melon, and apricot preserves. That comes in at 8.5 ABV. I'm pretty sure I've had this one before, but I'm not 100% sure, but I'm very much looking forward to that. That is out this Saturday too as well. Both of those are available at both locations, but you can pick them up. You can go on at freewillbrewing.store. You can order online. You can have it shipped to you anywhere in the state of Pennsylvania, anywhere in, what was it, Washington, D.C., and Maryland, I think, whatever. But if you come in at $85 or above, it's free shipping right to your house. It's fantastic. Or you can just kind of go online, hit the app, and you can order it and pick it up at the store. I'm not personally ready to go out and be hanging out with a bunch of folks that are drinking in a public place. I'm not there yet. I know Sean is not in the same place as I am on this one, but you know, I'm just being extra cautious. So
I think I found my bench bar stool with my name written on it from like March of like 2020.
Would you carve your name in a bar stool? It still got your ass prints on it from back then, is what you're saying.
I like what Mara Quip put on Facebook or Twitter the other day. She's like, you know, now I think everything's reopening. Am I going to be able to find my hoodie that I left at a bar before the pandemic happened?
Oh my God, it's funny. Oh man. Well, and last thing I got too is at Free Will, they started launching these Sunday sessions. It's basically live music at the brewery. Skylar Love kicked off their first show last week, and this Sunday is a guy, I don't know this guy, John Valerio. He's gonna be taking the stage from 1 to 4. You don't need a ticket or anything like this. There's gonna be like 19 beers on tap. They've got wine from Penswood. They got food out there in the food truck by Trey, locally sourced. So if you're looking for something to do, and you're not as kind of like as overly cautious, or maybe as cautious as me, and you want to kind of go do some live music shows, you do there. I'm just curious if it's gonna be outside or inside. I didn't get in further enough. I told you I was gonna look into it, and I didn't. So you know, use the interwebs if you want to go. But that's all I got this week, Sean. Anything else you got going on for the weekend or kind of fun stuff other than kind of getting ready to stock up for your big documentary weekend?
So Matt Briette's in this documentary and he's sporting a Van Dyke.
He's what?
He's sporting a Van Dyke.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Nice. Nice. So,
it's just going to be like, apparently like the pizza people from Lebanon County are on there, like the sauce guy who got all of his stuff pulled for making transphobic comments. Yeah, this whole entire like, I can't wait to watch this. Like, it's just gonna be fun. Yeah. So,
well, fantastic.
I'm not gonna tell anyone the name of it, but
yeah. But I mean, they're going to be, now everyone's going to be waiting with bated breath.
Well, I mean, like, the funny thing is, it's like they're trying to raise like $250,000 for this, because that's how much it costs to make this this documentary, according to their website. And they only raised like $6,000 so far.
Look, I think you're being, first of all, let's be clear, I think you're being a little fast and loose with the word documentary. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, in the interest of kind of like, I don't know, like baseline facts. Right, exactly. Right. Exactly. I'm like, baby steps, I know, but you know,
yeah.
So. Oh, yeah. By the way, thank you, Shanna, for jumping this in. That is true. I want to be clear: the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. Right, put out a poll, right, to find out who would be most likely to win the America First, who started America First caucus in the Pennsylvania legislature, and the winner is that freaking fascist. Yes, Mastriano won the bracket.
And Daryl Metcalf won in the House. So, which I think it's bullshit. I want an audit of that vote.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think Daryl Metcalf has it enough together to do that. So,
I think he's lazy.
That's what I mean. That's not. He's like.
Yeah, no. He's just like.
That's what I'm saying. I don't.
He's,
think
he's ideologically bent, and maybe like 10 years ago, he's definitely a reactionary. But like, there are now people in the caucus who are fucking further to the right than he is. Or in Harrisburg, and like Borowitz is like definitely like up there like with the crazy.
I was going with Borowitz. I mean, I went
with Borowitz as well.
Metcalf
is smart enough not to take selfies with neo-Nazis.
Yeah, and he's lazy. And so that's, I mean, I think those, I mean, those, you put those two things together. I think although I have to say, I wasn't so, here was my hesitation with the Borowitz call, is that I thought Borowitz, because she's so like off the rails with the religious stuff, there was a little bit of a kind of like disjuncture between whether or not she'd do the America First.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. She's right in line with the Christian fascists. The white nationalist people that we've been following. For
okay,
the past
all right,
months.
All right. I'm sold. I mean, I told you, I backed her. I backed her in the bracket. Yeah. So,
I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm looking forward to next week too. I'll be doing some work with Nurses for PA Coalition, union non-union coalition of nursing groups with SEIU Healthcare. So I'll be, you know, shooting our lobbying day. They really go for like safe nursing ratios in Pennsylvania, which the nursing ratios are pretty outrageous, to say the least.
Yep, yep, yep.
And then I'm getting my hair cut on Tuesday. Been looking forward to that.
Nice.
Literally like had this booked out about a month ago.
Nice. Like, please tell me are you gonna film the whole thing for your lifestyle channel?
Or? No, I'm not.
No, too bad. That would be fun.
But no, so I'm looking forward to
that. You get a manicure and a pedi too? Or
no,
just,
I don't.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Chops has been very busy this past month just because of like people are getting vaccinated and getting, you know, he's pretty much booked for the rest of the year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's easier to get a meeting with the governor than to get a haircut with my barber.
There you go.
So,
well, you know, hey, my other little big news is that I finished my last class of this semester on Thursday. I still have papers and grading to do ahead of me, but I am like, I can't tell you, I felt such a huge sense of relief and partial accomplishment by making it through this academic year. In the midst of pandemic. And I know my students, I've always said this about Kutztown students. I love Kutztown students. They rock the house. They're hard workers. They push through and you know, you give them half a chance, man. And they go the extra mile all the time. And, so, I mean, huge shout out to not just my students, but the students at Kutztown. I tell you, it feels like I'm so glad that all of this is over and that I can be off Zoom on a regular basis for now. Having said that, you can look for some changes coming up. So I know I've been teasing this all the time, but here's a couple things that you can expect to happen. So I'm going to be doing some work again back on our website. Because if you've been, anybody been over to RagingChickenPress.org, the content is pretty stale over there. You know, I started putting up our podcast on a weekly basis, or, you know, after each show. I haven't done that as much because I'm feeling, you know, it's just duplicating things in ways that just is not very productive and is actually is not contributing to what I wanted to do. So I'm going to redo the website kind of the next few weeks. And so you're going to look for a little bit more streamlined stuff that's going on there. I've also been kind of talking to a bunch of other folks that are doing podcast work. So I hope to have some kind of like media folks, podcast work, kind of come on the show, kind of talk a little about this. And ideally looking for ways that we're going to be able to say, kind of build on our network, right? Not kind of like, you know, do something on the, but actually do some kind of mutual aid and kind of like reinforcing for, you know, when major events come up, you know, even things like, say, you know, commentary panels and things like this. So we've got the kind of our go-to people that we know that we'll be able to kind of put together panels for kind of a discussion to draw from kind of folks from across the state. So that's kind of like, you know, I've been, you know, happening, different levels of conversations around kind of with a bunch of folks on this. So that's really awesome. So look for some of those shows coming up and some more discussion about that. I'm also looking forward to have a regular or semi-regular, so either weekly or bi-weekly, we'll see this, regular show on Wednesdays. It'll be a shorter show than, say, Out the Coop Live. But it looks like I can have, say, one potentially regular co-host for that, kind of on like maybe like a monthly or kind of bi-weekly basis, then come up and do something that I'm toying around with calling it, like, you know, like the one thing or something like that, which do a kind of quick take on one story of the week that we're going to drill down into a little bit. So some cool stuff that's going on. And, you know, again, for those of you who stuck with us all to the end of the show today, I want to thank everybody really for the support they've given us. I'm finally at a point where after the Trump administration was able to kind of clear my head and really kind of focus on, okay, where we take it, what needs to happen in the next step. And I've been lucky enough to have some people really kind of came out of the blue are of similar minds of kind of wanting to do this and actually want to work to build stuff. So I'm very, very excited about that. But I'll leave it there. We'll talk more details kind of coming there. But thank you all who have actually helped support the show. Thank you all who have kind of been with us from the beginning or who are brand new to the show as the last couple of weeks. I appreciate you all and thank you so much. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to remind you that you can help support us by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Absolutely fantastic. Listen, it's we got a wind warning out today. Big high winds warning on my area. We hope it's going to be a good weekend, good week coming up. I'm looking forward to summer, digging in the dirt, fighting a good fight. We'll see you soon, everybody. See ya!